That's the rule.
They tell me at... I'm not sure if I've ever shared this with you before, but they tell me at my parents' wedding, where I was not present, that my father got up and said, Marbed varim marbeshtus. So on this occasion, I'm not going to say anything, just it's a great cover and a great pleasure to have Rav Lopiansky with us. Thank you very much for giving us of your time. That's it.
Wow, that's good. It's nice not to be in America. Okay, so I wanted to look at, as long as something inside, I'm a fan of learning things inside, and I always quote my father, Zechayim Vracha, was Rabbeinu Finkel, and he used to, he had an expression, not as regards this, but other things, he used to say over folk wisdom of women that, you know, in the choice of making a lakshan kugel or a potato kugel, you're safer with the lakshan kugel. Because even if it doesn't work out as kugel, it still remains lakshan. Whereas potato kugel, if it doesn't work out as a kugel, you really don't have anything there. So I always say when you talk without learning something inside, so if the talk is mutzlach, then good. If not, then you have marbet dvarim, like he said. If you learn something inside, so whether it's good or not, no one's going to debate this, so... So at least we have something left over concrete, and I could be yotzed Birchas HaTorah this morning on something tangible. Just a brief introduction. I mean, it's the third time I'm learning something to say here now, but it's poor Gershon. It's never has to go through this three times. The Sefer itself is written by somebody called Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Chava. He was the Goyen had a very chashuv Talmud called Rabbi Nachum Mendel Shklov. He was Rami Yishlaim afterwards. Both the Goyen's Torah is mostly Kabbalah, you know, the part that's not Halacha, and it's obscure, a lot of it, most of it. Rav Nachman Shkolov is more verbose, but still extraordinarily obscure, very difficult Sfarim, not Sfarim that are easily learnable. He had a Talmud, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Chava, who was a Chashuv Rav, he wrote Charles HaChuvah's Bin Yitzion, and he wrote many of the Goyen's Sfarim, there's like his beer on it, Bear Yitzchak, I think, called in different places. Different. He wrote a very classic sefer called Pisa Sharm, which is one of the two classics for him used as introduction to Kabbalah. He meant to explain things. And this sefer is taken. Malas HaTorah is the Goyen's brother wrote a Likud of Chazal. He collected a Likud of Chazal about the importance of Talmud Torah. He wrote Ha'aras on the bottom, which are sometimes as big as the sefer. It's really his own pieces in a sense. And in the back, they have Likutim, and that's some extremely important points. And they're, he's being yonik from the Goyen's Cheder, but he's giving it over in a way that we can actually gain something out of it without being in any yonim. Okay, so let's start this piece. The famous Gemara on the Pasuk Le B'Shemayim L'Mei V'Yam. So if Torah were in Shemayim, it'd have to go up. So the Chazal Darshin, that the Pasuk means that it's something which it's not beyond your reach, but if it were, you'd have to, Shemayim is also a place to go, and Evayam is also a place to go. But the Vrem El Sichem Bir, Shalachur and Nirim and Akosov, Hevach Mashadosh Chazal. It really, the Pasuk, that's not the Pasuk conclusion. The Pasuk says, Akosov Aloymel Yisrael Shatayu Loynef Lacey, Vloy Choykehi. In other words, the Pasuk says, listen, you're going to come to an excuse that Torah is beyond understanding. It's not true. It's for you to understand. So, in making the implication that if it was beyond you, you'd also have to go look for it, is something that is contrary to what the flow of the Pasuk is. The Pasuk is coming to negate a possible excuse. The excuse is that Torah is in heavens, it's in the other side of the world. It's not. What does it mean you'd have to climb up? Like, how do you climb up to Shemayim to get to it? What does it mean? I mean, as a metaphor, but so the Pasuk we can understand, but so what does Chazal mean? If it be in Shemayim, you'd have to climb for it. Aval, Hanira Kavanis Evreim Zal, Shehini HaTorah Yadua Sheish Rabbeis Chalokim, Niglo V'Nista, Ukva Kasavti Mokam Acha Shalachay Nimshal Torah L'Mayim, k'moyshe p'chinas mayim yesh ben beis chalokim. Aleph mayim sh'ala shemayim, ve'aleph mayim sh'tasa shemayim. K'moyshe nem v'yorkiya b'sochamayim v'yimavdil, and so on. Let's talk about this, and let's first understand the point. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let's think a minute about the first, after Vayhi Or, the second day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the waters of the world into the waters that are Alyonim and waters Achtonim. So there are two descriptions in this pasuk, almost contradictory. One is it's all water, it's all the same thing, and one is that one is water that's Alyonim, one is water Tachtonim, and they don't have, they are split in the most fundamental way. The pasuk says Vayavdil, which means it was split into two. How do we understand that? In other words, this is a core idea of Torah. Right after Vayhi Or, which could use its own explanation, but not our inyan now, the Havdol between Mayim, Lamayim, and so on. So let's take an example, something that we use, we don't think about it. When you have numbers, the easiest way to look at numbers is association. So when you have a kid and he counts numbers, he counts objects. And the objects have a number to correspond to it. So the number two are two glasses. That's two. It's a description of this and this. When a person goes into advanced mathematics, he learns about numbers that don't exist. The square root of one minus one doesn't exist anywhere. There's nothing, and yet it's a very, very important number of sorts. There are all sorts of numbers that have nothing to do with the Metzius, and they exist. And more than that, you begin to understand that numbers are Metzius b'fnatzmam. I can solve for X and Y without knowing what X and Y are, but just those certain properties of it. So here I have a phenomenon we're all intimately familiar with, numbers, and I can declare numbers in a physical way, as a description of just like there's black and there's gray, there's one and two. And I also declare one and two as numbers. And I have a series of numbers. There are some series, a Fibonacci series. It's a physical thing. Flowers grow with that series, one, two, three, you know, five, eight, and so on. And yet it's a series that has its own mohus, and it's got nothing to do with flowers or anything else. So it's in one sense, it's an abstraction, totally not tied to anything physical. On the other hand, it manifests itself in a very real way physically. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world layered in a way that it's the same and it's absolutely not the same. It's Mayim. Mayim is, the Ramban says, water is the most fundamental building block of the world, like what we would call atoms, what we might call quarks, whatever it is that we own it on now, that is the most elementary building block. Water is the koach hayuli. It's like water is unshaped, unformed, it's fluid, it takes on many forms. So the world at its most fundamental level has a common in its water is the shorish of the world. It's the most shorishtik element, so to speak, of the world. And it's water, but there's alyonim and tachtonim, and a big havdalah. Let's take it to Torah, and let's understand it in that way. And when he says over here that there's nigla nister, let's understand it the same way. They once asked, the Shalach HaKadosh writes, they asked him, is it possible to have a stira between Nigla and Nister? And he said, by definition, you can't, because Nister is the Nister of the Nigla. Let's give a mashal for it. Imagine a person has an illness. So this illness is a bacteria that causes high temperature and a rash and some other symptom. So someone asked, can you have the symptoms without the illness? Well, by definition, you can have a rash without having the illness, but those symptoms, if by calling them symptoms, you're telling me they are symptoms of something. Nigla and Nista are not two tires. One was given to be used in a Beis Medrash, one is given to be learned in a by Mekubalim. I once heard a sideline, Rav Shlomo Volba was speaking, was in the Meyeshiva, about the importance of learning Musa, and he said, he called it Tairis HaNista. He said, Kisvi Arizal, he used to have this kind of sonorous voice, Kisvi Arizal, he said, that's Nigla. Every shtibl has a share between Mincha Mayer and Kisvi Arizal. Chayvus HaLavavus, Nista. Nobody knows what Chayvus HaLavavus is, nobody learns it, nobody understands it, and so on. Nista is the more, it's the same mayim, but it's the chelik elyon as opposed to the tachtum. Let's understand a minute, because I think today this is an important topic in both directions. There are some people, and one of the tensions between chassidim and misnagdim and the anti-chassidim was on this, and today I think it's taken on another form. The chassidim attitude was that you've reduced Torah to simply a box for your physical entities. So you need to know what to do with the food, make it kosher like this. You need to know what to wear, put on tzitzis. But the understanding that this reaches to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beyond. You don't even think of it. And by infusing and investing a lot of thought about the panemius of it. In other words, how is this thread, this woven thread, reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It requires sort of shifting gears and thinking of it on a different oifen and a different oifen and so on. That was one attitude. The counter attitude was, you're so into the Olam HaZayonis, you've actually forgotten that they're wool and they have halachas and you have to make threads out of them, so on and so forth. It was true also when, you sometimes use Torah as a way to escape, quote unquote, real life. And therefore, a person can be learning, the famous muscles of the Solanta. You could be saying Gevaldik Torah and Baba Kama and not being careful and ruining somebody's stuff and without knowing, without thinking, and so on. Or vice versa. Sometimes people are so caught up in Torah as a way of running your life. You know, if Hilchas Nida is, if all Hilchas Nida is to make a marriage a better marriage, then you've reduced the entire Torah into a way to have more desire for your wife. That's taking it all down and cutting it off from Elyonah. Asking which one is more important is like asking if which half of the heart is more important. Makes very little difference, because one without the other, you'll die no matter what. So it's not going to make much of a difference what you're missing. Just the question is, which type of way? Torah itself stretches from the bottom all the way to the top. And the first point, the Leba Shemayim, he is, Avlanir comes to Vremzal, Sheina, Torah, Yadua, Sheshubez, Chalokim, Nigla, Venista. Ukva Kasafti, Mokamacha, Shalachain, Nimshal, Torah, Lemayim, Kemoshe, Pchines, Mayeshes, Chalokim, Aleph, Mayim, Shalla, Shemayim, Vechot, Mayim, Shatarasa, Shemayim. So water itself is water with both halves. He says he has another remez. There's a famous thing in one of the Torah's haremes that letters are important not only as they are themselves, but when you spell out the word of the letter, you get you get meaning also. Like the beis is a symbol like this, and the beis is also beis yud tuf. And in Kabbalah they use both of them. It's called the miluah, the fullness. A very famous goyan about siyum, that in siyum the hidden part of it, the mem chof of the samach is equal to samach, and so on. There's a lot said over here. Mayim, if you take a look at it, mem, and the yud is yud, and vav dalet is equal to 10 also. So you have mayim, when you split it, the hidden part and the overt part are the same value. Rak, shemayim ashen nelam v'nista. V'zeh kavonis ha-kosim asher kosu lo b'shemayim hi, ratzu lo ima, shelo yachshev ha-odom, kivim shechelek ha-nista min ha-teira, ulamalo, umur min yonei ha-shafel, ulamaylo ma-sagas ha-nushi, im kein yifesh men al-yitzas b'klau. So a person will say like this, you know, the hidden part of Teira is beyond life. It's abstract. It's meaningless. It's something I can't relate to because it's not physical. He's not going to want to be Isaac. Ukvarech miru bazeh hazal harbe. And they said shebiyoyim adin shalom adam nistakalta merkavishali kashiru bazeh hamikubalim. A person will be held to task not learning Kabbalah. Let's talk about this point. They say over in Yerushalayim yesteryear, there was a yid who heard a shir from his, a pashta yid, it was a simple, whatever, cobbler, tailor, water carrier, fill in the blank. And he heard a shir from his Rebbe that they're going to ask a person, were you oisik in the Merkava? It's a piece of Merkava. He got very, very scared. And he was ois mensch. I mean, he barely knew how to read Ashrei and stuff like that. And maybe a little mishnayis here and there. So he went to Rebbe Shul Leib, and he said, I'm very, very, very distraught. And he asked him, what's the matter? And he said, I'm worried when I come after 120, I'm not young anymore, they're going to ask me if I was Isaac in Kabbalah. What am I going to answer? So Rabbi Shulayim told him, they know who to ask which question. You know, they've got the list of people and questions, they match them quite well. But I want to talk about this on a practical level. Let me say over Han Hagedai once heard, I had a chavrus and a neighbor who was a son-in-law of Nesiv Shalom of the Slonim Rebbe Zvonim Vracha. Slonim Rebbe himself was an extraordinary person. He was a tremendous hadras ponim, tremendous chachma, very, very wise person, a very practical person, and a very dehoibna person. A really real combination of midas and he was a big mechanech also. And he would train his Rebbeim with the following instructions. Never teach kids something that's above them or beyond them. It's not good. But there are occasions before a yontiv is that to teach them something that's a half a step beyond them. So that they know there's what to reach for. That was the way he was mechanech them, his Rebbeim. We, and especially, I think, because we're speaking to Makarvim, because everybody has Isaac in bringing back people, and it's a tremendous thing, obviously. But we tend to focus, just like there are people who become so isolated in Beis Medrash, they don't recognize that there's a world outside of people struggling with simple things, with life, and with simple inyanim. By being Isaac in that exclusively, you begin to forget that there's a lot more to it than the simple struggle also. The Nigla Nisa Torah is one. And Torah, it's like I said before, asking, you know, one without the other, which is more important, is really a kind of silly question. It's like asking, what's more important in a suit, the jacket or the pants? Well, a suit without pants and pants without a suit is not a suit. It's by definition, it's you know, one without the other is not the other. You can ask yourself which is more expensive, which is harder to make, but there's nothing in you can't ask. Which one does make it a suit? A suit means when your jacket and pants match. The person of your person needs to understand Torah has to reach the practical crevices of life. It means it is addressing the issues of life, and it has to still suit to the practical kiyum. There's also something that's taking you beyond, and of all the shtusim around, Torah leads you beyond those shtusim. And, you know, so when you speak about Kabbalah here, you know, he's speaking for his people, his generation. The piece of Merkava means, did you look above your day-to-day life in Torah? And learning, for everybody, for every single person, it's a different type of inyan. There's a time and a place to be Isaac in Torah, just like in Halacha. Halacha l'maisa, if you're learning all day long Ketzais and Sivis, you might be Mechal Shabbos because you don't know what to do. On the other hand, if you're learning just kitzah halachas, you don't have a feel for the Eimek of Torah beyond. And Nigla Nista means the part that's overt and apparent easily, and the part that deals with the practical life versus the part that deals with beyond. Those are both vital halakha of Torah. So Leib HaShemayim, he means, I'll just be mikatsa so that we have a finite thought. Leib HaShemayim means Torah has a chelik that's beyond. Yes, there's a chelik that's here, but you must look at the part that's above it. Be'eva Layam is the chelik, he says, of Iyun in Torah Shebe, in Nigla Torah, that it's going further afield than just what it says in front of your eyes and understanding that as well. That's basically what he says. We can talk a schmoozle, but whatever you want.
Okay, yeah. We have maybe 20 minutes, something like that, for questions and answers with the Rav. The Rav has a tremendous experience from Kiruv Rechokim in Ish HaTorah, which is where I heard the Rav, through to being a Rosh Hashiva now, obviously, in the Mir, and a member of the royal family, of the Mamleches Kanim. So it's a tremendous opportunity. I will not set the agenda of what, but any questions of the things that we're dealing with, the correct hashkofas and the things we're dealing with, and Minyan Idioma, but whatever anybody wants, don't be shy.
Yeah, just introduce yourself if you don't mind. I
Charles Kelly, I run the campus department here at all universities.
Uh-huh.
Together with Orson Mayer.
Uh-huh.
The generation has changed a lot in the last 10 or 15 years across the board, and you know, MS is no longer a Bakaro. People are much more, they research everything themselves, make their own decisions. It's much more difficult to present one set of one hashkofa or one set of halachas or philosophy as being the absolute MS. So in this, for this generation, what does the Rav think is the best approaches or approaches that can work for dealing with the current young people of today?
So first of all, I assume you would probably know better than me. You're out there. You're working with people, but you're right that you know, things have changed. In when I came to Ish HaTorah, Rav Noach was very into absolute emes and so on and so forth. If I were to stab a guess at my sense of it, is tachlis in life. On the one hand, when I remember, you know, growing up, life was very, very prescribed for you. You need to get married and hold a job down, you can have a family and so on and so forth. And there wasn't much room to change in that way. The 60s overthrew that part. Today, I think there's a certain aimlessness because family's not, it used to be raising a family, having a family. That's not anymore, even that's one of the many things. I think finding a tachlis for yourself and is something that maybe talks to a lot more people. So it's more than an absolute, but tell me with yourself, what is it that you're going to feel, you know, accomplished? What's going to be a tachlis? I find that to be many times what to talk about. I'm not, most of them, I'm not osik and people are really out, but they come by a lot, you know, a lot of people that are miskarev or so on, find bus. The yeshiva bus is physically in the middle of the town, so we service a lot of different people in different stages. There are a lot of people in Kiruv, Baruch Hashem. It's a big place and a lot of things going on. But they, so I meet people different things. I think a lot of those people, there was somebody in yeshiva by us, very smart fellow. He learned a few years by us. He was in YU after, before. He got married. He went to work. He worked in biotechnology engineering, very smart fellow. And then I heard that he's sort of off the derech, whatever, he's not from. So I went, he wasn't living in the area anymore. I drove at night and we spent a good part of the night schmoozing. His basic point was, the real, real reason was there was some family crisis, something his father that I think precipitated it, made him cynical and so on. But tachlis, there's always what precipitates it and what's the actual makom hapatish. He was working in a firm, 600, he told me, there's 600 people in the firm. They work in biotechnology, all brilliant. Now one person believes in Hashem, Torah, anything like that. He said, how could it be that I'm right? You know, it's obviously, I mean, I got to be realistic. And I was like, see. So I asked him, I said, tell me, of all the 600-700 people in that firm, does anyone have a set of beliefs or values of life? Is anyone to say, I found the Derech HaChaim, and this is a good life, and this is a true life, and so on and so forth? He said, absolutely not. So I said, so it's not as if, it's like in science, if you don't, there's no, you're not offering an alternate solution. You're offering some problems. And it's fascinating. He, even when, the, now Baruch Hashem, he's back and everything, but even the Tkufa when he wasn't down, you know, when he wasn't a Shem and Mitzvahs Bifnim or whatever, however you want to call it, he told me he wants his kids to grow up from, because that's the only real life. I remember he was, his sister passed away, and I went to Mahmovel, and his little girl came in, a six-year-old girl, a very sweet girl from Ghana, and she said, Daddy, you look so sad. And he said, because aunt also passed away. And she sang a little song about, don't worry, Hashem has a plan for everything, and so on. And he said, I don't want her ever to lose that. So he was makir that everyone had good kashas, but not a single person had, not a good teret. They didn't have any twism at all. So for a lot of people, finding a certain sense in tachlis, when I used to be in Eshet Torah, the saddest I would see, this was already in the 80s, sometimes they would bring in a very successful, wealthy man in his 50s who had never gotten married. And to me, it was depressing. The person would like, it usually was a person who was very successful. When he was 20s, people said, you're crazy, you have to really get off. And in the 30s, he had this and that. And now he's 50, and his business is successful, and lemi ani omel. Like, he's leaving to nothing, nowhere. It's like they would latch on to somebody else's family just as sort of to feel they have something. So for a lot of people, I think that that's, it's no one has a Derech HaChaim. It's not that it's as good, that's a Derech HaChaim. No one has Derech HaChaim. You simply work and you're successful and you're doing this and that. And so I think that that's something that will speak to a lot of people. Yes?
Can I press that? Isn't that a bit simplistic? That there aren't fried people who are intelligent, well-read, happy, menschlich. It doesn't seem to work. You know, when Rav Nachman used to talk about pleasure and pain, nobody else in the world has pleasure. They're not really happy. Come on, don't tell me they're not happy. They
are happy. Let me tell you, they're happy at the moment. And as, in other words, there's a, Rishonim speak about, Sfarno says it, about Yosef, that did Maisa Nairus. And he said, what's wrong with a Nair is he sees something in a certain frame of time, which reflects his age. And the here and the now, as a person in his 20s and 30s, many people are happy, adjusted, doing phenomenally well, tell you that. As he begins to sort of get over the horizon, every person has in himself a sense of, what am I living for? What am I? And that's when things begin to change. So if a person is pressing, you tell them, let's sit down. Imagine like there's nothing else. Look around everybody else. The strongest thing that you have in yourself, and especially as a Yid, I always say it's something which tells you a lot, the language of a nation, tells a lot about its nation. There's a word in Yiddish that has no translation in English. And it's such an important word, and there's no translation for it. I don't know other languages enough. I mean, the other language would do Hebrew, and it's the word nachas. There's no such word, because a non-Yid or second person sees, I'm great, my kid did very well, I'm proud of you, son, chip off the old block. You know, but the word nachas implies that I see accomplishment as a continuum of my father did this, I moved forward, I hope my children will move it forward, my grandchildren will move it still forward. I look at a certain perspective. In Umos Olam, it's everybody lives for himself for the day. So and so, we're proud, we're happy, we care. It speaks, I mean, it's something that Jews being attached to the children, it speaks to it in a certain way. And that's why people will leave over grants and things like that. The person has it in himself. And if you comp on it, I think, so you're right, a 20-something-year-old really will have that. A 30-year-old, and you begin to, and is might, if he, so as a person gets older, I think that does talk to a person. They usually, by the time they realize it enough, it's beyond. I mean, it's one of the great tragedies in America where people were maces made. The other generation, you have talented women, extremely talented people, and the message they got was, you got to be stupid and crazy to get married now. You're bright. You could be a great engineer. And the person becomes an engineer. And she said, one second, you're going to get married now? I mean, you could be the head of the company, isn't it? By the time they've reached some sort of makom, they turn around. There's nothing doing. And especially since people won't have kids after they're 40, it's like very rapidly life catches up with them. And I mean, I know from woman asked to Shaila, somebody in a kehillah, she's approaching 40. She's a shomer to her mitzvahs, absolutely. And then she got artificial insemination to have a child. Now, halachically, you know, I mean, it's one of these issues where halachically it's probably not usher. On the other hand, it certainly goes against the grain of everything that should be. I had the Rav of the community said he was struggling with, should he wish a mazel tov? And it was how much should he be accommodating? Should he make a big kiddush and wish a mazel tov? On the one hand, for her, it's a personal simcha. She did nothing halakhically wrong, but it's an akira from the fundamentals of Torah. It's an issue. It's not pashit. But the tragedy was because society taught her wrong. A woman's real sense of satisfaction will be having a family. She's aim kol chai. Whether you like it or not, the Torah called her aim kol chai. Rav Soloveitchik once spoke about when they tried to make Rav Rachman tried to make a bittul kedushin based on tov lemeisav tanduz no longer applies because today economically women can be as viable as men, so there's no tov lemeisav tanduz. Rav Soloveitchik spoke very sharply, and he said, "It's a pasuk in the Torah." And the world can flip over on its side. That pasuk is not going away. It's a fundamental of Bria. Ein kol chai is a fundamental of Bria. It's true. I'm for a woman who's competent and capable to develop a career. Baruch Hashem, today we don't need to be all day long in the kitchen and scrubbing. It's we can. I'm not either or, but understanding that the greatest tragedy for a person is not to get married. My father's kind of Racha was Mirashi Rabbeinu Finkel. He was an extraordinarily wise person. And his general approach to anything that came up was to delay, to procrastinate. And there was a reason for it. He felt the bugs always come out in the procrastination. Because you have to this is best and fantastic, you must be able to get. He said, you know, we need to think about it. And you come back. As he schlepped it, the problems would come out of the woodwork, the issues would come out. He felt always it's much better, and he did well with that. There was one thing that he was relentless, and that was shidduchim. If somebody came up with an idea for shidduch, he would say, okay, call now, later. No, you thought of it now. Don't delay a minute. I remember there was a girl who had a hard time finding a shidduch, and so I thought of some idea of somebody in America. I told my father. He said, good idea, go for it. So I said, fine. He said, what do you mean, go? He said, pick up a phone, call. I said, they're in America. It's 5 in the morning. I'm going to call. He said, call and apologize and tell him you didn't realize what time it was. And I want to tell you something. With my own child, my oldest child, I mean, my father passed away already, but my oldest child, you know, she wasn't old, but she was shidduch age. I get a call at 11:45 at night from my brother-in-law, Rabbi Yamak Kalbach, that I thought I'm learning with a chavrus of mine, and we both spoke about you, and he has a nephew, I have a niece, and we think it's a good shidduch. So I said, fine, I'll think about it. He said, no. Our father used to say not to think about it. I said, I actually happen to know the family also. It's a family that is distantly related to me. So I knew the family. I'd been there many times. It wasn't like something out of the blue, and I also trusted my brother-in-law immensely. So I said, okay, let me think. He said, okay, you know what? He said, I give you a quarter mile to think about it. I want an answer by 12 o'clock tonight. I'm serious. So I called back. I spoke to my wife. We were kind of a little bit overwhelmed. But I said, you know what? I know the family. I didn't know my son-in-law, but I knew everyone else and this and that. I said, listen, the answer is a tentative yes. I'll figure it. He called them first thing in the morning at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, they were scheduled to say yes to something else. And my mechutin, I mean, no, I know my mechutin, so he said, you know what, I think we'll try this first. And Baruch Hashem, you know, it's my oldest daughter is married. And they have already a son who's 20. So that's, but he you know, people don't realize.
It's available.
What?
It's available.
You have to speak to his parents, not to me. That's I'm finished. So I do think it's something that hasn't been, you know, impressed. It's a crazy, a whole just like my generation was misled by communism. When I was growing up, the wise people of the world, the big thinkers in France and in Europe, knew that communism is the emes and the good in the world. Today, the emes and good in the world is marriage, children, all of that is absolute yesterday. It's the day before yesterday. And a whole generation is growing up in a horror. By the time people realize that they were misled, it's too late. I have a person I learn with once a week. He's reform, not reform as much as not a short-term, it's just he's a little bit older than me. He's a few years older than me, 2-3 years older than me. A wonderful person, highly intelligent person. Actually got it through Aish. And I've been learning with him 15, 16 years. He would like to keep he would like to do things. His wife is not keen on it. She grew up with no background, so she sees it as strange. Whatever, he's a fine person, very fine person, very well-to-do businessman and so on. He talks to me with tears in his eyes that he hopes to live the day when he has grandchildren. He has 2 children. His son is not married, I don't know what, when, how, whatever. He's not even thinking about it. His daughter got married a year ago. Whether she's thinking of children, when, what, when. So my grandchildren, Baruch Hashem, are already of marriageable age. He says, like, basically, what's it all worth? So Baruch Hashem, he has the hope. There's something there. I mean, you know, there. But yes.
Just to interject, because this is really one of the major issues which is over the Al-Perek, is there's so much of a blurring of lines of orientation and the way people identify. You can't even refer to people as him or her anymore.
Right.
Everyone's a they.
Right.
And X, you know. So how do we? And what we are presenting is something that is so cultural and so much goes into that even the default is not marriage, and the default is there's so many options. How unabashed are we meant to be in the whether it's on the campuses or in the schools or with the young professionals who are really meant to be of marriageable age? Is this something which ought to be kind of
yes?
We're flying the flag for the family.
Well, I'd say more. I would look to the heart of the problem. I think that's a part of the issue. Every bar das understands that if you're pretty good at tinkering with something, somebody brings you something simple, you tinker with it, and you try to do something. A guy brings you a flashlight. You take out the battery, put it frontwards, backwards, you try to fix it up a little bit, so on and so forth. Somebody brings in an extremely complex machine. Unless it's not yours, you don't tinker with it, you don't tamper with it. You study things slowly until you make decisions. We're talking about something, people don't realize it. You know, if somebody were to tell you the heart works very inefficiently, I've thought of a brilliant mahalach to rewire the heart in a way that work a lot more efficiently, connect it in different ways. You'll tell somebody, I would love to read the paper you write. Find somebody else, not me. Male-female identity has been around for l'shitasam 50,000 years, they should say 5,000 years. It's a metzias that is the most deeply ingrained psychologically, emotionally, neurologically, hormones, everything. Somebody comes along and says it's not like that. So experiment on yourself, not on me. What does that mean? And you're talking about, you're not making a small minor shinui. It's like, I know somebody who was, he was an eye doctor, and he told me when they first came out with the laser operations, you know, for the eyesight, he said, by every count in the book works very well, he said, but no one's going to experiment on my eyes. He says, until I don't see 1,000 other eyes. You take people, and we don't realize what you're dealing with. Because somebody has a sheet and there's one woman you interview who said that she became so much better since she's a man and this and that, you're willing to robbing people of a sense of a clear identity, and that gender is important. It's somebody once made David Gottlieb once made a very good. I'm allowed to quote other people, yeah, from us. David Gottlieb made a phenomenal point. He said one of the things science medicine recognizes in the courts is when a woman has a period. she's less, because of the hormone imbalance, she is more likely to be irritated, so on and so forth. And it was used as excuse in court for I don't know, she hit somebody, whatever, something along those lines. It's recognized. She definitely has, you know, a change of mood and so on and so forth. So you're telling me that there's no difference between man and woman when the hormones of a woman and a man are so different? And you're telling me that the thinking process of men and women is different, not because there's some difference, but because somebody arbitrarily woke up one morning and decided men should be engineers and women should be nurses? That's, you're making a statement that Alech HaRai is, until you don't have three generations rewired and working, then how do you... You tell a person, it's crazy. You're talking about the most important sense of a person is a sense of self, and you're rewiring that? And without, what do you mean science has said? Where's the experiment? Where do you have 1,000 men converted to women who, after 50 years, say it was the best move, and 1,000 women converted to men say best move, and so on, and how many said it was horrible, and how many are weird, and how many are twisted? You're talking about tampering and tinkering with something so vital, and just getting away with it. It's crazy. Someone told me a terrible story. Somebody, I'm going to disguise some product, I don't know if I knew, the reason why I should know. This was a few weeks ago. I met somebody whose wife went off the deep end, you know, she just left him and married a woman. And he has a child that's like her, a 7-year-old, he has three children. He has a 7-year-old girl who came in and announced, so, you know, they visit with him, they live with her. She said that she's a man trapped in a woman's body. She got a short haircut. She wears man clothing. She only goes to, she refuses to go to a woman's bathroom and this and that. And his second wife, who's a very normal person, wants to have none of it, and she doesn't want her around in that way. She said, just can't bear to look at her. And what she tell us, she's very insistent. So forget about, I'm not talking the Torah, I'm not talking anything. You're letting a 7-year-old make a decision. Where did she get this nonsense from? She's a philosopher at 7. She heard it from somebody. And she was feeling down about her self-image or whatever. And someone said, no, maybe just a man in a woman's body. There are plenty of people like that, and you don't have to be embarrassed with it. So you're taking it, somebody at 7 make that decision. I said, tell her, at 7 years old, would you want to decide who you're going to marry? Would you be happy finding your partner for life? Would you ever decide on a career? Would you ever decide on a college? So, no, I can't at 7. At 18, we're very different. But to become, she's waiting for an operation, to become a man at 7 because you will aim it that you're a man, where's that garbage coming from? Forget Torah and mitzvahs. I'm talking about das of normal common sense. It's incredible. You're talking about doing such risky things on. I mean, all of the quote-unquote scientific evidence about things that are not very definable and not testable and not clear-cut are vague. It's like psychology type of studies. Unless you have 1,000 studies with 1,000 victims, it's not credible. I mean, you get these studies that are associated because it's not like, does sodium burn or not? Well, you take the match, you take the sodium, you adjust for this and that, and you have it. It's so complex, and it's and I think it's another generation that's going to, it's going to destroy the sense of man and woman, which is so vital to a person. I think it's. Yes.
Okay. Maybe shift gears a little bit.
Yes.
We were speaking about Torah Elyon and Torah.
What's your name? Sorry.
Shlomo Farchan. We speak about Elyon and Tachtoinim, relevant and not relevant.
Right.
This might be perhaps more relevant, more, I don't know if there's anything more elemental to what we do than the split of these two Torahs.
Correct.
Of course, there's no two Torahs, as we're learning, but the split between them. Dahainu, the process of becoming a Baal Tshuva, as Saul pointed out earlier on, today seems more and more and more to rest in the Torah Satachtainu. So the person will see the happy life, they'll see advantages of the family unit, they'll see...
Right.
Happiness. They'll learn all this chachma, which is incredibly relevant and prevalent in their lives, and then they'll say, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. The problem begins where they hit a moment where the Torah's tachtoinim actually doesn't either help, not machayev, or actually hurts them. So in other words, the guy's learning this process, all of a sudden he gets to a place where he realizes the Torah tells him he can't be gay. Or he gets to a certain process where the Torah tells him that the suffering that he's here having because he loves this person who's not Jewish, and he can't marry her. So all of a sudden, the Torah that was supposed to give him happiness is robbing happiness from him.
Right.
So the transition between Torah Tachtonim and Torah Elyonim is, I think, probably the contact point where either people stop becoming Baal Tshuva, or stop being Bali Tshuva and revert back to something else. There's a taiva, there's a problem, there's a nisoyin and emuna, etc., etc., etc. So there's one or two of two ways to get a person to get to Torah's Elyonim. One way is to shove the person into the Shamayim. Dehainu, at a certain point in a Makarev's relationship with someone, you push the person across into the bridge, because by definition, the introduction into Torah wasn't A, because they didn't relate to A at all. They only ever related to V. So there's a point where you just basically push the guy off the cliff, and you say, look, this is real, there is another world.
Up the cliff.
Whichever way you want to describe it. Whichever way you want to describe it. And you get the person to transition, to borrow a term from the earlier conversation, into another reality.
Right.
Way number two is you wait for the person to get to that place by itself. The problem that we've seen time and time again, which is what we've kind of changed in the world of Kiruv, at least here, is that we've stopped the pushing process. So it used to be there was a point where you would say, this is not, you know, you can't be here anymore. You really need to be in yeshiva. And there was that push that people, we would push people.
Right.
What we're finding is a lot of blowback from that push 4 or 5 years down the line. Somebody pushed me to do this, someone pushed me to do that, and there's incredible resentment to the point where it becomes unhealthy, etc. How does one help someone transition between Torah HaTachtonim, which is, it seems, the Pischuli Pesach, Kechudei Shoma, that's the way in, to the place where ultimately we'll get them to have a long, long and real relationship with Yiddishkeit, which is the Torah HaElyonim, where the person doesn't naturally get from one to the other. In a yeshiva environment where there's a pressure cooker and they're getting so much input, so you can kind of, the person can almost get there without ever really realizing that he got there.
Right.
But less and less people are willing to go to yeshiva.
Right.
So how do we get, what are just thoughts?
So I think you're putting a finger on a very important piece. Yes, the tikkufa where people would, I mean, in my days, I guess, or even before I was in Kiev in 1970, I came to Israel, everybody went backpacking to find themselves in Europe. Some people found themselves in Eshet Torah, and you know, and so on. That stopped, but I think a lot. I think finding a misgeres, I found, again, I don't want to say names, but there in yeshivas that are geared for Bali Tshuva, you have yeshivas that see themselves as being a total yeshiva environment, which is really at loggerheads of Torah's Tachtonim, and. You either draw someone into a whole different world and he forgets that he became about tshuva, or he even has harsh words to say about people that are makar of him. You get that type of feeling. Or you get a lot of pushback where people, there are yeshivas, you know, that have a little bit of a different approach and attitude, where it's a lot more flexible in terms of environment, living in a kahila, being in a kahila where people are more advanced, and hearing a different type of Torah is a good move. And creating a mezgeres, and again, making a distinction. I know that Rabbi Myers did it in Aish Denver. He hired a separate Rav and a separate minyan because he felt people needed to move forward, and there's room for beginner minyan, there's room for people that are past that, room for people past that. So I think in having it in mind, whether you can do it all or not, and creating things that are so in the middle, you don't have to go, it's like from Eshet Torah to the Mir, and never, which is a steer emotionally. You're going from a place that stressed the day-to-day life, you know, they stressed Hilchos Nida as a way to enhance your family life, to Hilchos Nida as a way to pull you away from physicality and make you Kulei Kodesh, and there's nothing in the middle. It's not a bridge, it's a leap. It's a leap across the river. There are places that say, you know what, in this environment we're sitting and learning in a different way because there's a world beyond where we are. They don't see it as a steer as much as a next step. I think creating environments like that would be very helpful. Even davening together, yes, I don't feel so comfortable with that, but daven there once a week. You know, I push people, you know, we have a small yeshiva. I push boys who've been there for years to go to Mir, or boys from our high school that have learning in yeshivas, that's all small yeshivas. Even for a zman or for a year, I tell them, even if you might gain in a certain way from a small place at this point that's catering to you exactly, but for you to get a sense of what the big world looks like, what the Yoni looks like, at least have a sense of what the big picture looks like. I think it's a piece that's very important. It's a, and You're right. If you have the ability to think it through and logically and create a miscarriage like that, it would be very important. And you can't see it. Just be seen as a repudiation of yourself. It's not. It's just like when a kid comes home and says, "I found somebody else I want to spend the rest of my life with." A normal parent will feel sort of a tinge of missing the child, but will be very happy he's moving on. Unfortunately, our parents who say, "Well, that's a rejection of me." Well, even if they don't say that sharply as that, but a lot of Shalom Bayis issues are caused. You know, there was a woman in Azabir, a friend of ours, who told my wife, her first daughter got engaged. This is like a year younger than our daughter. She was very upset with her future son. He says, he comes to the house, he makes a few perfunctory remarks to me, and then he takes my daughter and runs off. So my wife told her, "You should be much happier that he's not running off with you and running off with your daughter." He said, he's meant to be married to her and move out of your house. Get that. Yes, they're moving on in life, and that's part of it. I think from God also, there's room to daven English, there's room to daven mixed, there's room to daven only in Hebrew. There's room to talk about nidas enhancing your physical life, and there's room to talk about nidas moving forward into a more spiritual realm. And, each phase, I think of it in phases, and what's right for each person will be helpful. Maybe one more small question or something, and then I have to go push it. I have to move on to the next phase. What? Okay, Al Kapanim, Batzlacha. Listen, I mean, Baruch Hashem. Okay, so.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I just want to...